Welcome, everybody. My name is Greg, and this is the second episode of the podcast, My First Season. In this podcast, I will be interviewing people who worked in holiday or ski resorts, hotel and cruise ships, and we'll talk about their first season in the hospitality and tourism industry. My guest today, his name's James. He's originally from Minnesota, and he and I worked together in Cancun, Mexico in 2004, 2005. Ladies and gentlemen, James, how are you, sir?
Great. Thanks for the introduction. I'm excited to be here. Let's get it going. I didn't know that I was number two. How exciting.
Are you ready to light this fire?
I am.
Well, this is a very auspicious day. Not only are you the second guest, today is actually the 71st anniversary of Club Med, February 11, 1950.
Wow, so, look at that. And
no pressure.
No, there's no pressure. And what two better ambassadors than the great Swan and
MC Knuck Knuck? Was that the nickname we bestowed upon you? I can't remember.
Yeah, DJ Knuck Knuck.
Knuck Knuck. We'll get to that story later. I hope you remember why we called you that, because I certainly don't.
Yeah, neither do I. That's what makes it good.
Okay, so I want you to take me back to where you were living and what the heck were you doing before Club Med?
Sure. So that'd be 2001.
Okay.
I was living on the outskirts of Minneapolis, in a suburb there. I had an apartment, and I was working two kind of part-time jobs. I was a bartender at a place called the Timber Lodge Steakhouse, which is just a local, I guess you'd consider it like the Minnesota version of Outback. I bartended there. And then I also worked at a gym, and I did maintenance at the gym one Saturday a month so I could get a free membership to the gym. And that was what I was doing prior to Club Med. And then I was also a student, and I just wanted, you know, a change of scenery.
So who did you come into contact with that told you about it? Well, what was the first, contact point for you?
So I was really lucky. My dad was a big fan of kind of doing what you want, especially if you didn't know what you wanted to do. And I was kind of spinning my wheels. I was 22 years old. My dad said, you know what, why don't you check out Club Med? He had never been, but he had friends that had gone the late 60s and 70s, kind of told me it was, you know, a wild experience, but he didn't know what it was in its current form. And he suggested that I look it up, did a little search, and probably on like AOL or something at that time. And I found out about it, and it looked like they were hiring bartenders for Crested Butte, Colorado.
Okay, so, all right. So, yeah, definitely you had the internet to look up.
Yeah, for
sure. They had a website. Okay. All right. So you said, how many applications did you send in before you were contacted?
So I don't know if I applied directly through the website. I don't think I did. This takes me a long time. This takes me way back. Actually, now I remember. So they were having an open audition from a recruitment person, and they were doing it in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
What? Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
That is, if you remember a recruiter named Carrie. Carrie was actually the recruiter, and she was from Green Bay. She convinced them that while she was in her hometown, she would do one because Green Bay, it's fairly close to Chicago, and it's about 5.5-6 hours from Minneapolis. And so on a very snowy day, I drove to what's called the Holiday Inn in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Okay, so you never really got a clear indication from anyone, since your father told you about it, but what the actual day-to-day life was like then?
No insight at all, other than what I could find on the internet, and that it looked like they were situated in very picturesque locations, and it was not the frozen tundra of Minnesota.
So do you recall anything that they asked you? Did you have to dress a certain way, or did anyone tell you how to dress?
No one told us how to dress. There's actually a very funny story.
I'd love to hear it.
So I got to Green Bay. The interview was the next morning at 8 a.m. And I pulled in. And if you've ever been to Green Bay, Wisconsin, it's basically like a very working class suburb. And then there's a giant stadium, right, where the Packers play. And along there runs Mike Holmgren Avenue. And so there was a bar there, big Packer bar. And I walked in. And lo and behold, it was their 20-year anniversary, and they were doing quarter drafts of beer. So
Who was?
The bar was. That was their special. Their 20th anniversary. So okay. every liter was 25 cents.
Oh, boy.
So I sat down, yeah. And it was probably, I don't know, I must have got there. I got there when it was light. I certainly didn't leave when it was light, but I got there and, you know, had some dinner, started having some drafts of Leinenkugel's, which is the local beer up there in the Midwest. Met some people at the bar, playing pool, hanging out. Lo and behold, I wasn't in any shape to drive my car. So got a taxi ride back to the hotel, got about maybe a solid 4 hours or 5 hours of sleep. Did the interview process. They had us do some crazy signs, which I think we did hands up.
Hold up. They did not make you do that.
We definitely did in the ballroom of like the Holiday Inn.
So, okay. So this is your first time doing it. What the heck was going through your mind?
Other than a persistent headache and wondering why I did that to myself the night before.
So you did hands up with a raging hangover. Mm-hmm. And that's your first impression of hands up.
Yeah, that was the first thing we did when we walked in. I'm sure they were looking to see who was embarrassed, but you know, I was there and I was like, I'll give this my all. And then they asked us, we kind of did a round table and they asked us our experience and had we ever dressed up in costumes or, you know, how did we feel about that? And I had actually brought along a picture from the previous Halloween when I got a full Elvis costume that I rented at a professional costume store. So I had the whole gear, like including like the light up eagle on my back. And I was actually in the holiday parade for Halloween in Anoka, Minnesota, which they call the Halloween capital of the U.S. So I showed a picture of that with me, like 200 people in this picture. But the thing that sticks out the most after the interview, because I don't really remember the contents of it, but we got to the end and Carrie pulled me aside and she said, James, right? Yeah. She goes, I hope you're not offended by me asking you this, but were you drinking last night? And I said, yeah. And I told her the story about going to this Packer bar on Holmgren Way and it was 25-cent taps. And she said, yeah, you still got here at 8 a.m. and participated in everything. She was like, you'll do fine here.
I was just going to ask you that. Without knowing, were preparing yourself for a typical night.
Yeah, clearly. And I drove home and a couple weeks later, I got a call from the senior recruiter who was a former GO named Joel DeVitt. And Joel said, hey, we're going to send you to Crested Butte, Colorado. And I think that was November and I left December.
As to be a bartender?
Yes, correct.
Okay. So did you, in this time, did you get to talk to anyone to find out like, hey, what's a normal week like yet? Or you still didn't know?
No one, you know, I like, no, I don't like to test the pool before I jump in. I just like to run and jump in. So,
okay.
You know, I remember one thought because we all flew into, Denver International. And I remember sitting there because when you fly into Crested Butte, if you've never been there, you can fly into Gunnison, but for Club Med, you were flying into Denver. And then it was a 5 hour bus ride up to the resort. And I remember sitting on two pieces of luggage and I had bought two big hockey bags to put all my stuff in. And I realized that I was sitting on the two bags and that was all the contents of my life. So I had moved out of my apartment, didn't really have an address other than where my parents lived. And it was a sobering experience to be sitting there realizing that I was about to embark on an adventure, you know, regardless, good, bad, who knew what was going to happen.
So this was December 2001 that you were sent?
Yeah, correct.
Okay. Had you ever gone to a resort before, prior to working for Club Med, like vacation?
I mean, sure. I had been to, you know, like, Disney in Florida, or I'd gone to a resort in Hawaii with my family, but nothing compared to what I experienced, even on the bus ride up to Crested Butte.
Okay. So how did you feel when ultimately you must've found out that you'd have to work roughly 16 hours a day, 7 days a week with no day off. So how did you find out about that?
They had actually instituted days off. I think they started it in 99 or 2000.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah. Yes. 99.
At that point, we had one day off, but the chef de bar, which is the bar manager, she informed us that we'd work 12 days in a row and then we'd have 2 days off.
Was that you who instituted that at Cancun? Because I couldn't remember how we did that. Was that you?
Probably not me, considering I wielded zero power.
Oh, because I thought that was a brilliant idea. Okay.
I stole that one from Ray, the Canadian bar manager.
Smart guys, those Canadians.
I'm telling you.
So were you still, even with a day off, were you still tired that first week or two? Did you have any tricks for fighting off fatigue?
You know what? Tired isn't the right term for it. Because honestly, Greg, I had such an amazing time that, you know, energy it's so just builds, right? And it's contagious. And, you know, you would wake up after sleeping, you know, 4 hours, 5 hours, and you'd get there and everyone would be around or excited to get up on the mountain, or people would be sharing stories about last night. I don't really ever remember being, I never really remember being tired. I remember looking forward to my day off so I didn't have to bartend, but not tired.
Do you recall the first GO you saw? Was it at the airport when you flew in? Do you recall meeting who was it?
The first GO that I met was two Brazilians named Nando and Sandro.
Okay.
And they had just come from Club Med in Brazil. And what was interesting is the chef de village for Crested Butte was a guy named Greg, and Greg was from Minnesota.
Oh yeah. Okay.
And so he kind of took me under his wing right there. And we talked about the Gophers and the Vikings, and he introduced me to Sandro and Nando. So I guess Greg was the first one. But what was crazy is I had to sit in the Denver airport for like, it must have been 5 or 6 hours. You got there, and then flights were coming in from all over the world, and you just waited till everyone got there, and then you jumped in two huge coach buses and you're on the way up. But as soon as we left the Denver International Airport, you know, drinks started flowing. People had bottles of this and bottles of this, and you know, you're at least me, I was definitely partaking. And we got there and we continued the party. And then the next morning, early in the morning, we had to go to, what was the office called? Is that Gestion?
Yes.
Yeah, we had to go to Gestion and get our name badges, fill out the information for work, take care of all the paperwork type stuff. And then from there, the party just pretty much continued.
So were you happy in the job that you were doing? Or did you look around after a few weeks and say, oh, I'd like to do that job instead?
Yeah, absolutely. I looked around and I realized very quickly that the sports team had the best gig.
Well, you don't have to confirm or deny this, but we always heard that bartender GOs, somehow, some way got tips. So at one point, some of us wanted to be bartenders because we heard that there was some tipping under the table. Now, you don't have to say anything, but...
So it actually wasn't under the table, because in Crested Butte, the upstairs sports bar, and if you've ever been to Crested Butte, what happens is there's multiple bars in the resort, but you can ski, right? There's a big lift called Silver Queen. Between, you come down off the lift and go between two buildings, and these sliding glass doors open, you walk in, you hang up your skis, you walk out. That's the main bar. Main bar is for guests and you know, for the main people staying at Club Med. But the upstairs sports bar also had an entrance to the ski lifts. And outside people were welcome. And we had tickets for the GOs and the Club Med guests. And it was cash for the regular patrons that were not associated with Club Med. So we got tips that way.
Okay. So did you, I guess you wanted to be a ski instructor on the sports team?
Yeah, absolutely. That was the only sports that were there. There was that, there was ski techs, and then your other back office restaurant.
Did that happen in your first season, or you remained a GO bar? That whole
no, I remained season. I remained a GO bar the whole season.
Okay. In your weekly staff meetings, were you ever cautioned in a nice way about forming a relationship with another coworker? Was it encouraged, discouraged? I'm talking in a nice way. Like they just said, maybe it's better you don't do this. Would that ever come up or didn't come up at all?
I recall that from kind of orientation at HR, because with bar, you miss the majority of those meetings, right?
You mean HR before you got to the village resort?
No, HR, Gestion, our first like orientation for new GOs. I remember like sitting.
You had an orientation for new GOs?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. But there was very few new GOs. There was probably only not even 10 of us. And I later learned that a lot of the ski resorts, people will work the summer village and then they'll go back to the same ski resort every year.
Do you call them the reasons why they said it might not be a good idea to have a relationship, or they just said, try not to?
I believe the way they put it is they said there will be plenty of opportunity outside of the coworker pool.
Understood.
And that relationships with other GOs cause more problems than
okay. So since you're American, you went to an American ski resort. Did you have, I assume there were Europeans there as well.
Yeah. A ton of them.
So did you experience any kind of culture shock at all with being around that many Europeans? For example, European men kissing you on both cheeks on New Year's Eve. I don't know. Did you?
Yeah, that's definitely different to get used to, right? Like Europeans, and we had a lot of South Americans on the team as well, because Greg had come, the chief of village had come from a resort in Brazil. So he brought a lot of South Americans.
Like Nando and Sandro.
Yeah. And you know, Guy, I did my first season with Guy as well.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
But they're just warmer. And I mean warmer in a physical proximity sense, much more apt to hug. Yes, the kiss on the cheek, more arms around you during conversations, which I liked. I've always felt that, especially the Midwest. The Midwest is the people are nice, but it's not as a close-knit, close proximity type of relationship with people. Like found that, you know, it's cultural, right? So South Americans will give you a hug within a minute of meeting you, and not so much with the Americans.
true. Question, did the bar team have to participate in the shows in your resort at your time, or
it was we were encouraged to, and I wanted to.
You did?
Yeah, absolutely. And
to dance or to do the comedy skits?
Well, I tried to dance, but as you've seen me dance, I quickly got relegated to doing the comedy skits.
Or they put you in the back row like me by the curtain, right?
Yeah, they did that. They were like backstage right.
a little more. Okay. <Yeah.
laughs> So true.
So do you remember what your first show was?
Yeah, absolutely. It was a variety show. What were those called?
You're talking about, not Flash Cabaret. Oh, I know what you're talking about. Was this the one where we lip synced, or was it the one where it was just lip sync? Okay, so you did Queen, right?
No, I did Guns N' Roses, Slash and Axl.
Which song?
Welcome to the Jungle.
Okay, and who did you play?
I was Axl.
You were?
Yep, and my bar companion, Rob, was Slash.
Could you sing me a few bars of that a cappella, or you'd rather not? I just want to see knees, you know, give me one of those. Okay.
I think people would shut off the podcast.
Okay. They might have already. I don't know.
Yeah, they could have.
Okay, so you like doing the shows now, because you weren't in the big ones, and you probably didn't have to do rehearsal on your day off or rehearsal.
I was in Halloween.
Oh, okay.
And that was a very big show.
Yes.
So there rehearse on my day off, probably.
Were you playing Michael Jackson in that number?
It was probably one of like the pumpkin backup dancers.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. Important role. Nonetheless.
Okay. Yeah.
This is going to really sound like a strange question, because I know you and you're so lovable and charming and outgoing, but did anyone for some, no reason, actually no good reason whatsoever, not like you when you arrived?
Yeah, absolutely.
Really?
I'm
talking about people who have never spoke to you for a minute, just said, you know what? I don't like that guy. That happened.
Yeah. There's actually a funny story associated with this.
Okay.
He was a French Canadian. His name was Pierre. He was an old time GO, had been a ski instructor both at Copper Mountain and Crested Butte for years. And, how I found out that he didn't like me was about a month into the season. There was a full moon, and a bunch of the ski GOs said, we're going to hike to the top of the mountain, and we're going to ski down by the moonlight. And Pierre, in a kind of an offhanded, you know, condescending way, said, you know, I'll save you my Quebec accent. But he said, James, do you want to try to come with us? And I asked Ray, hey, Ray, can I get off early from the bar? And she said, absolutely, you can go. And we hiked up the mountain, and it was super challenging. I mean, you can imagine, right? You're hiking up a 3-foot vertical climb. We hiked up there, and we got up there, and you know, we had some drinks at the top of the mountain, and actually while we were hiking, the cloud cover covered the moon, got very dark and very precarious very quickly. And we got to the bottom, and Pierre said, you know, I never liked you, but I'll tell you, I respect you for making that climb. And then after that, we were on pretty good terms.
Okay. I don't know why he didn't like you, but okay. at least it had a good ending, this story.
Yeah. I no idea, but you know, some people don't like some people.
I liked you immediately. So that's what I have to say about that.
I like you. I liked you as well, buddy.
Really? Oh, thank you. So I take it you're a big skier. So I wanted to ask you if you learned a different skill while you were there. So did you learn how to snowboard, or you already know how to snowboard?
I went one time snowboarding. I face planted and slid probably 50 yards on my chest down the mountain before I stopped. I took off the snowboard. I walked down, gave it back to the guy that was running the lessons, and I put my skis on. And that was the end of my snowboarding experience.
Okay. Most people fall the other way, and then they can't take falling on their butt one more time. So, okay. Yeah, that would do it. Okay.
Full yard sale. I think I made it like 8 yards.
Yeah, because in a ski resort, there's not as many skills to learn. You can't, you know, windsurf, water ski. You can't, you know, rock climb. Oh. So you're kind of limited, right, in what you could learn, since you already knew how to bartend.
Yeah.
And ski.
You can learn how to horribly dance. you can learn to how to make passes at the French girl Gio's, not understanding how to speak French.
Okay.
That usually ended terribly.
I want to ask you, in your first season, did you have any celebrity encounters, whether they were an athlete, an actor, singer? Did anyone stop by?
Sure.
First season?
This was probably, and I still tell this story to this day, the Carter Foundation, which is Jimmy Carter's foundation, they rented out Crested Butte. So before that, the Secret Service came in, or their liaisons, and got all our IDs, gave us special badges, and kind of locked down the resort. Well, as much as you did in, at this point, 2002, in, you know, for an ex-president. So there was a showtime. Remember how earlier I told you that there was a ski-in section to get to the main bar?
Yes.
Well, the main bar, this was one of the most incredible setups you could imagine, because after you walked out of where the ski area was, where you could hang all your stuff, you walked into a giant open area that had these massive stone fireplaces, big leather furniture, a huge staircase that went upstairs to the elevator banks and then to the sports bar, and then a long, probably about a 20-yard long polished wood bar, and it was absolutely gorgeous. And then that way, if you walk down there, you walk down a almost like a tunnel, and that opened up into the theater where we had the shows. And that bar always closed at 10 o'clock. It was very busy during the day with the skiers, and then people would have their aperitif there before the restaurant opened at 6:30. And so that bar closed at 10 o'clock. So I was working the main bar shifts, and it was about, I don't know, 10:15 maybe. Show was going on, full bore. I could hear it. And a Secret Service agent comes and says, "Hey, are you closed?" And I said, "I am closed." He goes, "Would it be okay if the president and the first lady came for a drink?" And I said, "Absolutely." So he said, "Is anyone in back?" They went into the back of the bar. They checked that out. No one was there. It was just me. So coming down the tunnel from where the show was, ex-president Carter and Rosalind, his wife. So he sits down at the end of the bar, and Jimmy Carter is very nice. And he looked me in the eye, said, "How are you?" Da, 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 a little bit of a small talk. And he was, "May I have a Tanqueray tonic?" Sure, got him the Tanqueray tonic. "Rosalind, would you like anything?" She said, "No, thank you." So Jimmy was sitting there, and Rosalind was standing behind President Carter. So we talked about Minnesota. He said, "Oh, I've been there multiple times. I love the people." Very, you know, you could obviously see he was a politician. He was just so gregarious and engaging, and asked me about my family and how was Club Med and did I ski, and talked about the conditions and everything. And here's the part of the story I love. So after about 10 minutes of back and forth, he says, "You know what, James? I really enjoy talking to you. I'm going to have another Tanqueray and tonic." And Rosalind puts her hand on President Carter's shoulder and says, now, Jimmy." Jimmy Carter turns to me and he says, "I used to be the most powerful man in the world. Now I can't even have a second cocktail." And they got up and he thanked me. And he said, "I'll see you later." And they went up the stairs to the elevator. And that is my story of my experience with ex-president Jimmy Carter.
So you served number 39 and Rosalynn Carter.
Yeah, wow. There you go. Also during that time with the Carter Foundation, Hank Aaron was a guest for the Carter Foundation, and I met him in the elevator. I walked in, I said, I'll grab those bags. And I wasn't looking because you're doing Volage Volage, which I'm sure you could explain, but you're just trying to get the bags to people's rooms. And he said, no, I'll take that one, son. And I looked up, and even I think he probably had to be in his late 60s, early 70s. He was an imposing figure. You know, you could see, like, you know how sometimes professional athletes just have a different build? And that was definitely him. So
getting back to Carter just for a sec, because I know your personality, your sense of humor. So did it occur to you, or at any point in time, did you think, maybe I'll make a joke right now with the Secret Service about something? Or you just said, nope, I'm going to play it straight.
You know, I think I was so young, and to be honest, I think I was intimidated. And I was intimidated not only because it was President Carter, but I was intimidated my first season. Because as you continue your career in Club Med, you can almost spot the first season GOs, like yes. deer in the headlights kind of deal.
And they have to take a nap as soon as they get there. Yes.
Not comfortable. And that's kind of how I felt. You know, I was always, you know, am I on thin ice? Am I doing the right thing? You know, and it's so no, it never occurred to me to make a joke.
Okay. Well, you've
listened. Can I show Jimmy Carter my gun?
You listed a lot of things you did like about your first season. So was there anything that you didn't like?
We lived at a place called, what was the name of it? Marcelana Apartments. And it was from the road. We walked up the hill. Then you had 131 steps up to the apartment. And then I lived on the third floor. So not only did I hate trudging back to my apartment after the bar closed at, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning because it was Club Med, but my room was so small and I had my own room, which later in Club Med, I learned that was a luxury. I had my own room, but the bed was so short that even though I'm only 6'1", my feet hung off the end of the bed, of this single bed. And so I remember distinctly telling my friends back in Minnesota that I was having an awesome time, but our accommodations were total crap.
Was that it?
Yeah. And
that's not bad if, you know, if there's only really one thing that you didn't like. Well, okay, getting back to you having to do hands up hungover. Okay, so did that ruin you for Crazy Signs? So did you like Crazy Signs? If you did, do you have a favorite one or top three?
I always loved Crazy Signs.
You did?
I did like Crazy Signs, except when certain chiefs of village would decide that they were going to do 90 minutes of Crazy Signs.
On Elegant Night?
Yeah, that's, there's nothing like sweating through your undershirt, your dress shirt, your tie, and your suit coat.
And there's no and how far away was the closest dry cleaner? Or did
there is no dry cleaner.
Okay, yeah. So did you have a favorite one?
There's a Febreze cleaner. I think Muevelo.
Okay.
I really liked.
I could hear you say Muevelo all night. Okay.
Yeah. Trying to think if I know the names of some others. I liked Hong Dong in Cancun.
Oh, thank you. Well, yeah, we're sticking just to the first season ones, but thank you. I appreciate that because I brought that one over from Asia, but thank you.
A little nod to you. But yes, Muevelo. Yeah, because the hands up that we did in Crested Butte was the older one, the slow one. You know, the
yes.
version I'm talking
yes.
about. Yeah, and I never liked that one.
So being on the bar team, and I never worked in a ski resort, so did you have to eat a dinner with the guests 24/7, or did you guys have your own rule?
Yes, if we were off during, like usually bartenders would either go in right at 6:30 if they were working, depending what bar, or we'd go in late, you know, 10 o'clock. And, you know, if it was sparse in there, you did the Club Med 5-minute meal and got back to work. So it wasn't, go ahead.
Were you anxious about that? Like, were you introvert back then? Or were you always extroverted?
No, I was constantly talking to people. I had the assistant bar manager was another Brazilian guy. He would constantly yell at me, less talk, more work. And,
okay. Wow.
I never paid attention to him.
Kind of the opposite.
Yeah, I knew almost every time I was in the restaurant, I knew someone at one of the tables from the bar.
Were there any employees or managers that like stood out to you in a positive way, like that first season like where you were so maybe awestruck, like, wow, I like the way they did that, or they're so dedicated to their job?
I thought Ray, our bar manager, was very dedicated to the job. The resort general manager, the chef de village, Greg, I wasn't really sure what his job was.
Okay.
You know, I knew that he was the boss, but to me, he didn't seem to do anything but really shake hands. And, you know, that was my impression of it. You know, it was really hard to get an idea of the managers on the ski team because they were on the hill. Right.
Yeah.
You know, so, but yeah, thought Ray was a great manager. And I thought the chef de village was fantastic at glad handing and, you know, being kind of a resort cheerleader.
Are you glad or sad we didn't have social media back then?
Oh, I'm definitely glad that we did not.
Okay. Yeah.
And that's not because I thought I was acting inappropriate or there was anything nefarious about our activities. I think that it allowed everyone to live in the moment. You know, you miss a lot less when you're not staring at a screen.
Yes, exactly. So while you were there, I assume other geos were getting ready to go to the beach season. And so did you automatically start picturing yourself on a sandy beach somewhere?
Oh yeah. I had all these illusions of grandeur. Like I was going to go to Bali or Tahiti or even Cancun or, you know, scenic Punta Cana. That did not happen.
So did you make a request for top three?
Yep, absolutely.
And what job did you choose or ask for?
A bartender, because I didn't know about the other jobs. I didn't know that I was...
So you didn't know how to sail yet?
Well, you'll laugh at this.
Okay.
I didn't think I was qualified for any other jobs.
Okay, but did you know how to sail, or you learned that?
Yeah, absolutely. I grew up sailing in Minnesota.
So why couldn't you do that in Club Med?
I didn't have a sailing license. You know, everyone was, oh, I have a certificate, a French sailing certificate. And I thought that's what I needed. You know, I was young and impressionable. And I didn't realize that, you know, you can make a sailing geo in an afternoon.
I did it even less.
There you go.
I could teach someone to sail in 10 minutes.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Well, maybe in Europe and France are big on the brevet, you know, that class system, you know, classification. But yeah, you learn if you have a pulse and, you know, I mean, I had to fill in for to be a circus geo later on. You know, I didn't know what I was doing, but, you know, but you learn fast, right? Okay. So, so did you leave the resort not knowing where you're going? Like you had to go home and wait, or like for your second season, I mean?
No, I received my affectation while I was in the resort.
You did?
I did.
May I ask where it was?
Yeah, it was in scenic Port St. Lucie, Florida.
Okay. Are they really playing the American card with you? Yeah, this guy's not good enough to go out of the zone yet. We're keeping him stateside.
Okay. Sandpiper Club Med, baby.
As bar.
Correct.
Okay. And did you, while you were at Copper... Oh, sorry, Crested. Did you ask around, like, hey, what's a scene like in Port St. Lucie? Like, yeah. I'm sure there were geos that you worked with that worked there, right?
Yeah, people said that the water skiing was great. The tennis was great. It was the most real life I would ever experience in Club Med, the closest to real life. Like you can go to, you can go to Denny's on your day off to get breakfast. You can go to Target. You can go to Walmart.
You can see a movie.
Yeah, none of this excited me, but...
Plus, you would also spend a lot of money, whereas...
Spend a lot of money.
On an island like Columbus Isle, where we both worked, you can't spend anything, so...
Yeah, that's very true. They also told me that there would not be very many young ladies. It was a family resort, but they told me there was a massive mini club there. And a lot of the geos were in couple.
Okay. So there it was more or less encouraged because
there's
a family resort. Yes.
Yeah. Out of necessity or proximity or a combination of both.
Well, what was Crested considered? I forgot if I ever knew, but what was the designation? It wasn't singles. So
it was a family resort. It did have a mini club.
Okay. That's right.
But once again, because it was a skiing resort, everyone was out on the mountain all day. And then if you've ever gone from, let's say, Minnesota or Texas or anywhere and gone up to the mountains to ski, after you ski and get some food in you, you're going to bed.
Yeah.
You know, you're exhausted. Crested Butte sat at I think 9,000 feet. The mountain was 11,500. So it was people had altitude sickness. We actually had a lot of South American families, tons of Brazilians and Argentinians. I actually, you know, learned two Portuguese phrases so I could help at the bar with the Brazilian guests. That's how heavy their presence was in Crested Butte.
Did you learn any Portuguese while you were there?
Only those two phrases.
Okay. Well, your retention is good. Okay.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Well, James, yeah. That's man, that's one hell of a. I don't even think I heard your Jimmy Carter story when we worked together in Cancun. So I'm glad I got to hear it. That's you sound like you had a great time. Do you think? So let me ask you this. So you how long about did you work for Club Med roughly?
8 years.
So was there something magical about that first season? Like I know each one might be special, but do you. Yeah. I don't toss around the word magical lightly, so I'm just wondering if you felt that first season was something.
I do think it was magical. You know, the camaraderie that you get. I still talk to people from my first season. That was amazing. You know what I loved about Club Med was people's, I guess, authenticity. You know, it's hard to be humble when you're dressed like some kind of flower person dancing to Coca Cabana. You know, you just have to be real, and you work so much and in such, you know, just close quarters with people that you get to know them on a different level than you experience, you know, outside of Club Med or outside of that kind of industry. I loved it. I love that, you know, Club Med provided us a ski pass and I got to ski a ton of days that year. And, you know, it was just close. And it's like, I don't want to make the analogy that we were going through war together, but it's like you work so much and you depend a lot on other people that it teaches you something about, you know, what you can do when you work together as a team and what you can achieve. And, you know, you confide in those people. And this is a testament to it. You know, you and I worked together in, what, 2005?
Yes.
And here we are, 16 years later.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with everything you say. And lately, I look back at it as such a utopia. I mean, nobody,
really
I don't recall anyone speaking about religion, politics. I mean,
never.
And even, you know, and if you were gay, that was more than encouraged. In fact, all the guys wanted every guy gay, so they'd have more women for them. You know, I mean, it was such a utopia.
It really was. And it kind of shows you that, you know, a smile and a hug can go a long way. You know, and you had people, you had a lot of guests that said, you know what, I had the greatest week of my life. And there's something special to be said about that. Yeah. Not something you necessarily get outside of that industry.
That's right. Yeah, no, that's what I remember Uncle Larry, for those of you who knew Uncle Larry, he was a infamous person who lived at Club Med. And he'd go from Playa Blanca to Cancun. He would live there year round. And I remember asking him why he did that. And he said, well, you know, I'm from California and no one smiles there. Everyone's mean to you. He goes, I come here and there's just smiles everywhere. Everyone's smiling. They're always smiling. And that's why I want to be here.
Sure. It's a powerful statement.
Yes.
Well, you know, I think that's a point you made. Everyone wanted to be there. And if you didn't, and there was geos that quit while I was there, but they didn't want to be there. They didn't want to participate in shows. They thought they were working too much. And it's a real line of delineation, right? You either want to be in and you want to be 100% in, or you don't.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and they'll weed you out pretty quick. You can tell who's going to make it and who's not.
Yeah, that's right.
Pretty fast.
That's right.
Well, James, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show, podcast.
Thank you.
And this has been awesome. Really good to connect with you again. And I'm really impressed by your stories. And I've just learned a lot I had never known about you. Wow. Now I miss you even more. Damn it.
Yeah, come on down.
Damn pandemic.
We'd love to see you. Thanks so much.
No. Thank you for being a guest. I really appreciate it. So ladies and gentlemen, that was my first season with Mr. James Martin. Any last words, James?
Be good to each other.
And I'll leave you at that. Bye.